This is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. 16 years ago, President Clinton and a bipartisan Congress replaced aid to families with dependent children with temporary assistance for needy families, known as TANF, which has proven to be an utter disaster for poor parents and children, even more so in the midst of recession and economic downturn. The shredding of the safety net began with AFDC and is expanding with proposals to cut, to privatize, to block grant, or set up vouchers for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Both political parties seem willing to sacrifice key elements of these programs at the altar of the budget deficit.
With us to discuss these critical programs are Joe Baker, president of the Medicare Rights Center, who serves on the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Medicare-Medicaid Advisory Panel, and was former New York State Deputy Secretary for Health and Human Services under Governor David Pattison, and Timothy Casey, senior staff attorney with Legal Momentum, and Nancy Altman, co-chair of the Strengthen Social Security Campaign.
And I want to start this discussion with, we can start with Joe, but really encourage Nancy and Tim to come in. When I told Joe offline that we were going to be discussing, if you will, the safety net, he chastised me in a manner of speaking and had problems with that term. And I want to begin there. Indeed, what is wrong with our kind of referencing and looking at these vital services as safety net issues?
It's interesting that Nancy is on the line with us and on the show with us because she's the one that taught me this. And that is so it's making its way around. I think safety net is an important term for a lot of what the programs that we have in our society. But I think some of the programs that we have, and really I would posit all or most of the programs we have, are really foundation of social and economic security in our country. When you talk about a safety net, you talk about something that no one wants to fall into. You want to avoid a safety net. You know, they're not something that brings a happy connotation. They prevent you from breaking your neck, but you don't want to end up even there. And I think we do want to end up in a strong and vibrant Medicare program. We do want to end up with getting our Social Security benefits that we've earned and paid in for so many years. And frankly, we do, if we need it, want to end up in a strong Medicaid program that helps, as we know, a whole millions of middle-class Americans who could not afford long-term care unless they had the Medicaid program as it exists today. So I really think these programs are strong foundations or pillars of our economic and social security and health security, and we should be describing them that way.
This is Nancy. I agree with Joe completely. There's so much misinformation and so much has been lost from the time these programs, all the programs you mentioned, AFDC and Social Security, not Medicare, but AFDC and Social Security were part of the Social Security Act of 1935. There was a hope and there was an effort at that time to have universal health insurance. We couldn't get it through. But we did get Medicare and Medicaid in 1965. These were lifelong struggles. The country just had our 77th anniversary. And what's misunderstood is that Social Security and Medicare are insurance. Social Security provides wage insurance when the wages are lost as the result of disability, death, or old age. And Medicare, of course, provides universal health insurance for seniors that we all contribute to, we all earn. Safety net is a term that I think Ronald Reagan certainly popularized, and I think he may have been the first to use it in connection with Social Security and Medicare. And as Joe says, insurance is something that prudent people buy because they understand life's risks. A safety net is something you fall into, but you really don't want to. The idea is these benefits are earned, and people should feel good about receiving them, and the government provides them in a very efficient way. They're really a measure of success and what government can do. And unfortunately, neither party today is emphasizing all the good and important roles that government plays in our lives.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with the importance of preserving and strengthening and maintaining Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. But I think it's also important to look back at the tremendous damage that welfare reform has done to the assistance for poor families with kids. Over the last 15, 16 years, we've seen the number of poor kids getting benefits go down from roughly three-quarters of poor kids, only one-quarter of poor kids today. And the average benefit in the welfare system today for a family of three is only $428 a month in the median state. So all these things have already gone wrong as a result of welfare reform, and we need to go back and try to repair some of the damage that welfare reform has done. And secondly, I think we also need to keep our eyes on what's being proposed for the food stamp program, whose official name is now the SNAP program. The Ryan budget that was passed in the House within recent history would do to the food stamp program basically what welfare reform did to the cash assistance program. And the practical consequence would be a major reduction in aid for poor families.
And I think Tim is really pointing out something that should be a cautionary tale for all of us. Welfare programs, mean-tested programs, have never had the kind of support of these universal broad-based programs. They've always been vulnerable to attack from those who believed in extremely limited government. Social Security and Medicare withstood those attacks, and Medicaid to some extent, although not as well, because they serve a middle-class population. There's been an effort for the last 30 years to undercut Social Security and Medicare. You even have liberals like Senator Durbin talking about making these programs more effective, putting a means test in. They're not intended to be those kinds of programs. They're broad-based insurance. And there's a counterpart program to Social Security, the Supplemental Security Income Program, SSI, which is a means-tested program serving disabled and older Americans who are very low income. In contrast to Social Security, which has broad-based support, SSI's asset test remains what it was from the beginning, and the income disregard and so forth. It's a program that is in need of expansion, and I think we should be going back to more of an AFDC program rather than TANF.
Joe, on the basis of that discussion, let's talk a bit about Medicaid. I mean, Medicare is much in the news now, as it should be, but one doesn't hear that much about Medicaid. What are the threats to Medicaid, and also, is there a way that it could be strengthened?
Well, I think a couple things. I think the threats, as Nancy is saying, are pretty much across the board. I think all of our programs, government insurance programs, social insurance programs, as well as the programs for the needier and more vulnerable low-income folks are in danger. They're all grouped together as kind of entitlements, which is now a dirty word, when, as Nancy said, they're really earned benefits or they're part of securing some level of security for our poorest and our most vulnerable. So I think all of those programs are endangered and in the same boat. I think you've got two proposals in the Ryan budget that are very much in the news because of the nomination of Paul Ryan to be the vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party. On the Medicare front, you've got a premium, what he calls premium support in his budget, was basically a voucher. So moving away from government guaranteeing through the Medicare program a set of benefits into guaranteeing a certain amount of money that you can then go out and buy private health insurance policy. And I think there are two problems with this. One is that the voucher doesn't keep pace with medical inflation. And so the Congressional Budget Office has shown that out-of-pocket costs for folks that would be in this program would be $6,000 to $7,000 more expensive than if we continued the current Medicare program. And you say to yourself, well, that doesn't sound like a lot. What we've got to remember here is that 50%, half of people with Medicare, are living on incomes under $22,000 a year. They also have about $53,000 in personal assets. This is not a rich crowd that's running in the Medicare program. And, you know, any additional expense is really going to mean they're not going to have access to health care. In the Medicaid context, what the Ryan budget proposes is to basically block grant to states and turn over to states a lump sum of money and say, you know, kind of do with it what you will within these certain broad parameters. But, you know, you states are going to be in charge of Medicaid. Now, that may not be such a bad thing. It will be because of the money involved. I'll get to that in a second. May not be such a bad thing in New York, which has a pretty good history of a Medicaid program that meets most, if not all, of the needs of those that are in it. But it will be a different story, as you can imagine, in Texas or Mississippi. But the problem with the Ryan budget is it not only does the block grant, but it takes out about $800 billion off the top before it makes those block grants, in order to save the federal government money. And this is the essential point. These proposals aren't to improve the Medicare program or Medicaid program. They're to privatize it or voucherize it and to save the government money by shifting costs either to people with Medicare themselves or to the states that run the Medicaid program. There's nothing in there that in these proposals that gets it to the underlying cause of the problem that we have, and that are rising and, in some instances, out-of-control health care costs. The Affordable Care Act, you know, so-called Obamacare, takes aim at some of those things. The Ryan plan really does not.
Yeah, I think it's also worth pointing out that the Ryan budget would also, you know, block grant the food stamp program based upon the so-called model of the TANF program. And what we know what that means. It means less aid for needy families and a sharp reduction in the amount of aid that they receive.
You know, I find it just striking when you talk about food stamp, Tim. A good number of the younger people that I represent have zero cash incomes. They exist entirely on the reality of extended families and the mutual support there and food stamps. It is absolutely a sustaining, life-giving reality, but striking that our society has young people with children who have zero income effectively.
Well, that's a consequence of welfare reform. It's virtually impossible in many places for people who are needy to access the cash welfare program. Fortunately, they're still able to access the food stamp program because the food stamp program has not been turned into a block grant because there are still national eligibility standards and national rules governing program administration that encourage states to provide benefits to all eligible families. We don't have those sort of rules in cash assistance, and if the block grant proposal for food stamps gets adopted, I think we'll see the same consequences.
Nancy, what are the threats to Social Security as you see it? And please don't just limit yourself to the threats of it existing, but how do we strengthen Social Security? How do we build on it, especially in this time when pensions are going on the way out?
Well, that last point you make is extremely important. Social Security works extremely well. It is much more efficient than you find with private sector pensions. And as you say, traditional pensions are disappearing. It returns more than 99 cents of every dollar it collects in benefits. And it is very successful. It's been built over these 77 years carefully, carefully monitored. The biggest problem facing Social Security is that people lack confidence in the future of it. And that is not an accident. There's really been a campaign to undermine they haven't been able to undermine support for the program, but there's been a lot of money on the other side attempting, as Joe says, to call them entitlements, to give you the sense that it's a government giveaway, that these people are wealthy, that they're greedy geezers, and so forth. And it's really penetrated the mainstream media and many of the policy elites that somehow we can't afford it, that it's in competition with these other programs, and so forth. Social Security is extremely affordable, unlike our health care costs, private as well as public. I mean, I should point out that Medicare, like Social Security, is extremely efficient. Its administrative costs are per capita are lower than you find in the private sector. But Social Security is, at its most expensive, will be 6% of gross domestic product, which is much less than many other countries spend on their program today. Its benefits are extremely modest, providing less than full-time, on average, full-time minimum wage work, yet essential. Two-thirds of seniors rely on it for half or more of their income. It's a program, and it's got, if you look at polling, it's got broad-based support. So the threat that's there are that somehow our political elites have been convinced that we need to come up with some kind of grand bargain, and everybody's got to put in a bargaining chip, And so what they're talking about are some are scaling it back, cutting the benefits in various ways, but some are really fundamental reforms. Both the Bowles-Simpson proposal, which is a commission that President Obama appointed, the chairs of that, and Paul Ryan have come up with something very similar, a change to the way benefits are structured, so that at the end of the day, after it's all phased in, everyone will get simply a subsistence-level benefit unrelated to wages, which is completely out of context with what the program is supposed to provide. So Social Security is under threat both from its friends and from its opponents, unfortunately, friends who really do not have lost the meaning of this program. And so all of the talk of the grand bargain of the fiscal cliff and the, you know, all of that and the super committee before that, it's all a way, unlike AFDC, this has a broad constituency and among conservatives as well as liberals, Tea Partiers as well as union members. And so the politicians know that they can't in the sunshine change this program, but they're talking about, Paul Ryan talks about fast-tracking it. As I say, there's lots of talk of a grand bargain. That's where the threat comes. And it comes from, in the name of saving it, everyone is for strengthening it, everyone is for saving it today, but they'll undermine it, undermine the support for it, and undermine its effectiveness in providing it's both our most important anti-poverty program, but it's also our most important program of economic security when wages are lost as the result of a permanent and serious disability, death leaving young children, or old age.
Well, you know, talking about Simpson-Bowles, I mean, all of these things seem to be, or all the proposals therein, are about lessening the role and the cost to government and really shifting it on to the populace. And certainly that is where we're looking at the attacks on Medicare.
Right. That's absolutely right. I mean, all of the proposals that are out there that are considered serious proposals for Medicare have some or all of their impact, if you will, by shifting costs onto consumers. So if you raise the eligibility age for Medicare to 67, well, what does that mean? That means people will stay on their employer-based coverage longer, so that means they'll either be paying for that or their employers will be paying for that, or they will have to buy individual insurance to cover that gap of 2 years or continue their individual insurance for another 2 years. It's not solving our underlying problem, which is the rising health care costs. It's just simply shifting costs from one segment of society to another, from the federal government to individuals or to employers. And that's what this really is, both of the proposals in the Social Security world by Ryan and others and in Medicare. It's one vast shell game to basically take the numbers off the federal government's ledger or off the deficit, or, you know, to decrease the deficit, or in many instances not decrease the deficit at all, but rather to allow to for provision of tax breaks or, you know, tax rate, decreases in rates for folks at the upper echelons of the income structure. So, you know, you really are not looking at serious policy proposals that get at the underlying issue. You have a lot of talk about baby boomers being, you know, very greedy and trying to grab at things. And what people, I think, understand and are pushing back against, it's not just us, you know, howling in the woods, as it were. People understand this is that these programs help families. You know, I was speaking about it with my father the other day, and he said, well, you know, I used to send your grandmother a check for $200 because she couldn't afford her prescriptions under Medicare. Now, there's lots of problems with the prescription drug benefit in Medicare, but at the end of the day, it does provide prescription drug coverage for people, and he wouldn't have to do that today. So, you know, if you are asking people with Medicare to pay more, if you are asking, as you were talking about earlier, Mimi, with the if you take away food stamps from those younger folks that don't have incomes but are using those to survive, they're going to have to reach out to their family more. They're going to have to, you know, we're all going to pay for it in our families. These programs are essential programs to kind of support families, not just the generation that's accessing those benefits now. The other thing, and I think I find very cynical, is the Ryan proposal saying, oh, well, people today on Medicare won't be affected because if you're 55 or older, you can have the old program. Well, I think there's two things wrong with that. One is many people say, well, if it's good enough for me, it should be good enough for my kids, and they should have the same thing I have. We shouldn't be, you know, changing it just because, you know, or for my kids, and I don't want something they won't have. And then secondly, I don't think that's true. I mean, if you think about it, the Medicare program will have a declining, the traditional Medicare program will have a declining number of younger and healthier beneficiaries coming into it. They will have other private options. They will probably take those options because they're younger and healthier. So Medicare, the original Medicare program, will have a pool of sicker and older beneficiaries. And because premiums for that program are covered by beneficiaries, 25% of the cost of the program is in that Part B premium that people pay, that's going to shoot up. You also have to think whether providers are going to want to continue to be in the original Medicare program under the Ryan scheme. So I don't think that it's going to protect folks that are 55 and older today to move to the Ryan plan. I actually think they're going to see some negative consequences to that in addition to the younger generations of their family.
So they'll pay more and get less.
I think that's the ultimate result. And the other thing is what's interesting is, you know, Ryan says, well, we're going to have competition amongst health plans, and that's going to bring costs down. I say, well, look, we've had competition amongst health plans and employer-based coverage and individual coverage for the last, you know, 40, 50 years in this country. I haven't seen prices coming down. And then number two is, okay, so I, as a 67-year-old consumer, I can do a better job of controlling health care costs than the federal government or Aetna or Humana. I don't think so, number one. And then number two, yeah, I will do a better job in a sense on myself, because if it costs me that much more and I don't have the money to pay for it, I won't get the care. And I think that's where the rationing comes in. I think the Ryan plan does lead to rationing. It's self-imposed rationing. It's based on economic factors, but it's rationing nonetheless.
Tim? You know, one of the things that particularly hits me is, really, Nancy said it, the Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are more broad-based. There's still a different receptivity in the populace. There is a contempt, I think. There always has been with AFDC as well before Clinton destroyed it with the Welfare Reform and Reconstruction Act. The fact is that there's a contempt for the truly impoverished within our society. Doesn't that have as much to do as anything else with shifting of the costs or getting monies back from really the decimation in their entirety of these programs, or casting a whole population aside?
The United States has much higher poverty rates for family poverty rates than other high-income countries. You know, that has a disproportionate impact, of course, on women and on people of color. And there are different explanations, different people argue different reasons why that's so. But we seem to have an extreme commitment to individualism in this country, so less support for social welfare programs. And then there's a racial divide that sees some programs as being programs for people of color, even though statistically that's not true. But those negative racial stereotypes are sometimes played upon to weaken public support for programs that target low-income families. And it's very unfortunate.
So in a word, Tim, and then we're running out of time, what do we need to do about TANF? What do we do to it? I hate to use the term reform, but what do we need to do?
And by the way, for each one of you, why don't we allot a minute there? What do we do to sustain and enhance, actually, these programs? Tim?
Well, I think we need to reform welfare reform by going back to the drawing board. We need to do in cash assistance what we do in food stamps. We need national eligibility standards and national minimum standards in benefit amounts. That's the SSI program, for all its different difficulties, is a much better program now than AFDC ever was, because it's a federally administered program with national federal standards. So we need to take the same approach in cash assistance for poor families.
Nancy?
Social Security, as I say, is a program that works extremely well. Every generation has built upon it. Starting in 1935, every generation improved it and expanded the economic security. We're a much wealthier nation than we were back in 1935 or even 1956 when we added disability, 1965 when we added Medicare and Medicaid and so forth. Our coalition believes, as a policy person believes, we should be talking about expanding the benefits. We certainly should not be cutting them. There are ways, making it solvent over 75 years, which is a very long standard, a very conservative standard, should be done. It can be done by bringing in increased revenue. That's what the American people want. We should follow the will of the people on Social Security.
Joe Baker.
Well, I think I would echo a lot of what Nancy said. Medicare has, we've got, you know, a long history of improving the Medicare program and fixing it when we feel costs are getting out of control. But the bottom line here is that we need to work on programs and policies that control health care costs for all segments of our society, whether it be Medicare, private insurance, or Medicaid. If you think Medicare is unsustainable, so is private insurance. And what's really unsustainable are these rising health care costs. The Affordable Care gets at those. The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, gets at those rising costs. It's a start, but we need to continue to work on it. One thing that we need to look at are drug prices. We pay more for drugs in this country than any other country. The Veterans Administration gets a better deal than Medicare. And so we could save a significant amount of money right there. There's some short-term things we can do to shore up the program. It's strong as it ever was. Every time there's been a crisis, Congress has reacted to it, not by changing the program or upending it or cutting benefits, but by looking at reimbursement for providers, looking at costs, and seeking to control those. And Medicare has a better history over the last 20 years of controlling costs than private insurance, and we need to continue to strengthen it to attack those costs.
Well, there you have it. That's our platform in response to the Republican National Committee. I'm pleased to have had Joe Baker, president of the Medicare Rights Center, and Nancy Altman, co-chair of the Strengthen Social Security Campaign, Tim Casey, senior staff attorney with Legal Momentum, and many conversations like this to come, because we have to demonstrate the sustainability, the importance of these programs, and indeed enhance them. And hey, Medicare for all. Thank you so much, all of you, for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.